Time to talk canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring with Darren Bush. Darren is co-owner of Rutabaga, the largest paddle sport shop in the world, actually. We used to be in the Midwest, and then it was in the U.S., and now it's in the whole world, and we're really pleased to have him along to talk with us about canoeing and kayaking and what you can do during the fall season. There's a lot of things going on in the fall, and really pleased to have him with us. Certainly, if you want to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, give us a call. We've got a caller online already, but there's a line open for you, so call in with your own questions or comments. Darren, welcome back.
Thank you. I have one correction to your lead-in.
Yes.
You can take the co off co-owner.
Oh, you're the owner?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. When did that happen?
The past couple months.
Oh.
Yeah. We had a five-year plan. We purchased the business 5 years ago, and we accomplished our five-year plan, and my partner is retiring and doing volunteer work, and I'm not.
So you're the guy now.
I am the guy.
You're the only guy. Well, I tell you what, how's business? Pretty good?
Business is good, yeah. It's not astronomical, but I don't like astronomical because then it's up and down. It's just I like steady incremental growth, and that's what we're experiencing.
Well, that's wonderful. I tell you what, just to be a little parochial here and talk about Madison for just a minute. With all the rain, and not only the Madison area, but southern Wisconsin in general, with all that rain, the lakes rose, and on Lake Monona, we had a kind of a nice past several weeks with very little motor traffic on the lake. In fact, no motor traffic on the lake for quite a while, and I noticed a lot more canoers and kayakers out there on the lakes, the Madison lakes.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I'm always a little bit. I have mixed feelings about this because, frankly, there's a lot of people who live on the lake who have power boats, and
yeah, well,
they want to use them, and they feel kind of bad they can't. At the same time, it's kind of nice to be out there when it's quiet. So it's a mixed blessing.
Living on the lake with a power boat and a canoe, I found it. My wife and I found it kind of enjoyable, a little quieter.
Yeah, one of my favorite rivers is just south of here, the Sugar, and it was in flood stage early on, but when the water came down again, all those trees that used to be in the way were moved, so it was kind of cool.
Well, Diane in East Troy has a question for you, so let's go to Diane. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, I heard that there was a canoe trip from Eagle Spring Lake to Lake Lulu, and Lake Lulu is supposed to be a secluded lake, and there's a mile-long channel in there, and I have two children, and I'm wondering if that would be about a canoe trip, if he knows anything about that.
Eagle Lake would be near Eagle?
No, this is Eagle Spring Lake, and it's right outside of, it's about 5 miles from Muguanago.
I've never paddled there before. I'm not familiar with that, but certainly those smaller bodies of water are nice for children. Especially younger ones, just because their attention span isn't as long as ours is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But getting them out there for an hour or two, my general rule is 15 minutes per year.
So, oh, okay.
So if they're 2 years old, they can take about a half an hour. If they're four, they can take about an hour.
Okay, and I have an 11-year-old, so that would be a...
11-year-olds, we count them as adults.
Yeah, okay.
Once they get up that, they can go 3-4 hours out there.
Sure.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, we don't know. Maybe somebody else listening knows. So it was some sort of commercial venture, or do you know, Diane?
No, I think this restaurant rents canoes, and then you take this trip to Lake Lulu, and the DNR owns land on Lake Lulu and Nature Conservancy, and it's supposed to be very secluded and close to Milwaukee.
Sounds lovely. Yeah.
Sounds wonderful, yeah.
There's one place you might check. The Sierra Club has a river touring section. If you go to the Sierra Club and do a search for Wisconsin River Touring Section, they're a very, very active community. They're out there a lot doing trips in different places and all over the state. Nice people.
And where was the restaurant or bar located? Do you know?
It's on Eagle Spring Lake.
On Eagle Spring Lake, okay.
Outside of Muguanago.
I'll bet somebody's going to call in and give us the name of that place, too. So that's another way to look at it. So stay listening. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or in Madison at 263-1890. Mary in Oshkosh, I believe, is next, so let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. What can we do for you?
I have a canoe repair question.
Okay.
We got a secondhand Ranger fiberglass canoe this summer and bumped it into the metal float out in the middle of the lake and took out about a quarter-sized chunk of whatever that outer layer is.
Okay. That's called gel coat. Go on.
Okay. Is that something that we can repair ourselves, or do we need to take it somewhere, or what's up?
You can repair it yourself.
Okay.
Basically, gel coat is just pigmented resin.
Okay.
And the outside of most boats that are made out of composite materials have that on them, even big power boats down to small canoes and kayaks.
Oh.
So basically, you get this gel coat, this catalyzed resin, to color match as close as you can. If you don't care so much, if it's just, you know, to fill the chunk, try and get as close as you can. You get a catalyst. It's called MEKP.
Say that again?
The catalyst is MEKP. Methyl ethyl ketone peroxide.
Okay.
Do not get it on your skin.
Okay.
Okay. But a few drops of that, there should be directions on it, on how much you mix, and you just kind of dab it in there and put in thin layers.
Oh, okay.
And then when you're done, just take a sanding block.
Uh-huh.
You're gonna fill a little bit higher than you normally would, and you just sand it off, and then steel wool, a little bit of polishing compound, and you can never know it was there.
Great. And can I get this stuff at Fleet Farm, or where do I go?
Maybe. You might try West Marine. Where are you calling from? Oshkosh? Yeah, I'd go to West Marine ask them. If they don't have it and you can't find it, call me, and I'll get some to you.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. And Steve in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Larry and Darren. Here in the town of Grafton, we are planning on installing a couple of canoe launches on the Milwaukee River. There is a lot of internet information available on various designs, but I wonder if you might recommend something in particular that gives good planning construction advice for a simple improved canoe launch.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I know that deck boats, kayaks, require specific aids in getting into a boat on the water.
Yeah, getting in and out of a kayak from a stream bank that's pretty steeply pitched is tricky. I mean, what I look for a good canoe launch is, you know, fairly shallow access in terms of the slope, canoe or kayak launch. And then if there's an eddy above that, that's always good, because if you don't have an eddy, you put your boat in the water and it starts to float away before you're even into it, right? So if you can position the canoe launch so that there's a bit of calm water there, then you can step into your boat and then go out into the current. In terms of improving the stream bank, floating docks and stuff like that usually aren't good for those kinds of rivers, because there's maintenance involved.
No, we really don't want to do that. We just want to do improvements on the bank.
Yeah, what usually people do, they use landscaping timbers and pea gravel and things like that. And that requires a couple shovels full of maintenance every year, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of things are what you usually find when people improve a canoe landing. Get the mud out, get the slope out, and, you know, get some sort of step down that's big enough to put your boat on while you're getting organized.
Can you recommend any specific resources that might give design information?
You know, off the top of my head, I can, but if you call me, I can certainly see what I can come up with.
All right.
That's easy to do.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. How do people find your number, by the way?
It's 800-I-PADDLE.
800-I-PADDLE.
Yeah, 472-3353, and then my extension's 228.
All right. 1-800-I-PADDLE. That's the way. And your extension, 228?
228.
What's your, and probably you can find that online too, but what's your address online, your web address?
It's rutabaga.com.
Rutabaga.com.
Yep.
All right, let's go to some more calls. You can join in, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Jeff in Racine is next. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much. I was at the Racine Inwater Boat Show this year, and also I had entered in the Salmonorama, well, it's a big fish contest now.
Yeah.
And there was a fellow there with what he called a hydrojet-powered canoe. I'd never seen that before, but he was telling me and my friend that they had invented them back in the 60s. Evidently, it was from the, I've got a little bit of literature here, but from the Span Boat Company up in northern Wisconsin. And now they've brought them back. I guess they're made in Waupaca and assembled in Sheboygan, somewhere like that. But I was wondering, what was, are they new again? Or is this something that is, relatively old and brought back again? Is this something that's rather safe? I know they're using what he called kind of a hybrid lawnmower motor with a little jet pump on the thing. You can take out the motor in about 10 minutes, he was saying, and put a plug in the boat and take it to boundary waters. And I just, you know, I thought it was rather a unique item. I saw him out there fishing, but...
They're very unique. they're actually kind of cool. But the guy who is making them now, I think his grandfather started making them in the 50s, and he bought the tooling back. It's the same... The same molds and the same castings. I mean, it looks kind of like right out of 1950. It's like kind of a little anachronism. It's kind of cool. As far as, you know, how they work.
How does it work? Yeah.
It's like a jet ski in terms of it's got an impeller on it rather than a propeller.
And,
and it sucks water and squirts it out the back end. And the motor's mounted right through the hull. To be honest, the quality of the canoe itself is pretty much 1950s technology. They haven't really changed that very much. But you know, it's a cool tool. And I saw them up at Ducks Unlimited at the Outdoor Festival in Oshkosh. And, you know, the guy's a really nice guy, and he makes a really funky product. He's had them down here before. And hey, it's time on the water, you know.
it's time
on the water.
So it scoots you along at a...
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take much to push a canoe. I mean, a good athletic person can produce a quarter to a third of a horsepower. You know, we're not that strong. So you think, you know, a tandem canoe, you're going to have a, you know, 2/3 of a horsepower max. And this thing's got, you know, 3 or 4 horsepower. So, yeah, they scoot along real nicely.
Thanks a lot for calling, Jeff. Appreciate it. Darren Bush, owner, I should say, of Rutabaga of Madison, the largest paddle sports shop in the world. Our guest here today as we talk canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring now with Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga, the largest paddle sports shop in the world. Go to rutabaga.com to learn some more about his organization. You sell quite a few things, actually, over the web, don't you,
Darren? Yeah, we have a pretty substantial web presence. Basically, we wanted to be the biggest paddle sports shop in the middle of nowhere, North Dakota. And we basically try and give the same service on the web as we give in the store. So if you're in the middle of nowhere and you need something, we want to have it for you. If you've got a local shop, by all means, support them. Mm-hmm. There's not very many of them, and we need to keep those guys alive. But if you can't get it, we'll take care of you.
And you've even shipped to Russia, if I'm not mistaken.
I think the farthest we ever shipped was Jerusalem. We shipped a canoe to Jerusalem. We've shipped canoes to Germany, to Ireland. The one to Jerusalem was a wood canvas boat. The guy just, he wanted to be a voyageur, I guess.
Okay.
It was pretty cool.
Jennifer in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I'm finding that whenever I go on vacation or camping these days, the first thing I look for is, do they have any kayaks to rent or use? So I'm thinking about just buying a kayak. It would be for just myself. And I'm not sure what kind to get and how much to spend. I don't want to spend a lot because I'm not going to use it more than maybe half a dozen times per year. What would you suggest?
That's okay. What you think. it's fairly addicting. What I would suggest is that I need a lot more information from you. I need to know, you know, physically, how big are you? What kind of car do you have? Can you lift the car, lift the boat on top of your car? You know, it's all those little things that really make a difference. Are you going to be paddling mostly day paddling?
Yes, and it would be mostly like ponds, lakes,
mm-hmm. You know. Slow-moving rivers.
Right.
Yeah, creeks and stuff. Okay. You don't need a very big boat, probably 12 to 13 feet long would be plenty. The biggest question is not so much the design as the weight. There's not very many bad designs out there if you look for a reputable brand. I mean, there's some that you'll find in you know, the local gas station selling boats in the back that aren't so good, but generally you look for something that you can pick up and move around, because the more you can move it, the more you'll use it.
Okay.
And what's and I expect the cost goes up incrementally with the decline. The less the weight, the more the cost.
It's an inverse linear relationship.
Yeah.
basically, yeah, it's like anything in sporting goods. The more you spend, the lighter and more high tech it is. And there are intermediate steps. It isn't heavy, cheap, expensive, light. There's things you
grades.
Can get.
There's grades.
There's grades of it, yeah. So polyethylene's the heaviest and generally the least expensive. Composite boats, Kevlar, carbon fiber, things like that are the most expensive but the lightest. There's some intermediate boats made out of polycarbonate, If you go on our website, there's a how to choose a boat article on there that covers all this stuff in detail.
Okay, and about how much do you have to spend to get started?
For a good 12-footer that's got, you know, a good seat, that's, you know, another really important thing. You get a boat with a bad seat, you'll never use it. You know, between $500 and $700, you can get a really nice boat that'll last you 20 years.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. All right, thanks a lot. Bob in Linden Station, hi to you.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question on the Boundary Waters. I discovered the Boundary Waters back in the middle 70s when I was in college, and in fact found it a good activity to raise my boys to go up to the Boundary Waters. My question is, the older I get, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea and have a CPAP machine, which is making my overnight trips to the Boundary Waters more and more difficult. Do you know of any other device that I could use to go on those overnight trips?
Yeah,
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. you know what I think? One thing you might consider, rather than trying to find, you know, a power supply for that, I've got other friends in the same situation. What I did when I had a let's call it a mobility problem, I couldn't get out with young kids, is I'd go and I'd rent a small cabin right on the edge of the Boundary Waters, and then I'd do day trips in. And you can still see quite a bit. And I find on the eastern side of the Boundary Waters, there's, you know, around, like the Honey Shack River and the Vermilion River and those rivers in there. You can get pretty in, pretty far. And, you know, yeah, it's not the same experience, but it's better than not going.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate the information.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And I should mention, for our caller earlier who was wondering about Eagle Springs, the Eagle Springs Lake, I think it was.
Yeah, Eagle Springs Lake, yeah.
The name of the restaurant that rents canoes is the Eagle Springs Pub.
There you
go.
Eagle
Springs Pub.
I bet it has a good burger.
Probably. Let's go to Dave in Eau Claire. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've got an old Discovery canoe, and I'm wanting to put a small trolling motor on the back of it. Do you have any suggestions for something like that?
Sure. There's a thing that we carry called, it's a side mount. It's from a company called Essex Industries, and it's a cool little company. I can tell you about that later. But it's basically an aluminum shaft that goes across and spans the gunnels. Then it has a flat wooden spot where you can clamp a trolling motor onto it. And because it's off to the side, it's easy to reach. You don't have to reach behind you.
Okay.
And what size trolling motor are you looking at?
It's a pretty small one. I think it's a Minn Kota, probably the smallest of the Minn Kota sizes.
25-pound thrust, 30-pound thrust?
Yeah, probably 25.
You know what? That's plenty. That'll scoot, yeah. That'll scoot a canoe along just fine.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And, by the way, I went online just to, while you were talking there, to the Eagle Springs Pub, and they do have a website. So a caller could go online to their website and find out about that outfit.
Is there a menu there?
I didn't look the menu up.
Come on, Larry.
Dave and Hayward. Hi, Dave.
Hello, guys.
Howdy.
My wife and I have never canoed before. Since moving to Hayward, we would like to try the Namekagon River.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, and I'm going to check out your website, but I'm going to talk to you first. What's the best starter canoe for two adults who have never done it before?
The best starter canoe.
Well, there's a starter, like a starter home, but, I mean, it's a good canoe for two people who have never really done this before.
It depends on the people, and it depends on the kind of water you're going to be on most of the time. There's a lot of choices out there. I mean, saying best canoe is like saying, you know, best spouse. You know, there's nothing perfect. There's just acceptable compromises. And you know, what I like, you may not like. That said, there I would look at something made out of what's called Royalex, which is it's a composite material made of ABS plastic. Think, you know, football helmets with a vinyl skin on the outside. Those are generally the kind of boats you use for moving water and for white water. They take a lot of punishment. You can really kind of beat the snot out of them. And I'd want a boat with a little bit of maneuverability for that river. You don't want to have a boat that's really stiff tracking. So, I mean, something like a Winona Spirit 2 or Aurora or Novacraft Pal or Prospector, those are all things we sell quite a few of for those purposes.
Okay. Good luck, Dave. Thank you. And Julie in Wild Rose, hi to you.
Hi there. We are kayakers, and I think it would be important for you to bring up how important it is to have a paddle, a good paddle, a light paddle, something that you'd be comfortable with for a long period of time. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Do you want a job? you bring up a really good point that some people think that the boat's the most important thing. And yeah, a good boat's important. But the paddle's the primary tool you use to touch the water. And if you look at like fly fishing, people will spend a lot more on the rod than they do on everything else, because that's the sort of the primary thing you're holding and you're moving. So yeah, I would agree. I always tell people to buy the lightest paddle and the best paddle they choose to afford. And if you're going to economize someplace, I always say take a little bit of money out of the boat and put it into the paddle, because you'll have a much better experience. So she's absolutely right.
What does a good paddle run?
Boy, that's a good one. A good kayak paddle, you can get a pretty decent one for $150. That's pretty light. My touring kayak paddle cost almost $400, but it weighs 22 ounces. And it's a really, really nice paddle. And if you're paddling all day, you lift the boat twice, you lift the paddle a couple thousand times.
Yeah, so that's $400 well spent, as far as you're concerned.
Well, like I said, if you're going to buy a fiberglass kayak for, you know, $2,500 to $3,000, I would rather somebody buy a polycarbonate kayak or a used glass boat and then buy a $400 paddle. You'll have a much better experience.
Darren Bush, our guest today, owner of Rutabaga, the world's largest paddle sport shop, and talking canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring with him. Certainly, we have open lines now, so we can get you on pretty quickly here if you have a question. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. I looked on your website here a little bit ago, and you had some, there was some mention of gear for cooler conditions, you know, as we get into the fall. Talk a little about that.
Basically, the paddling season for us is pretty short if you look at it traditionally. It's basically Memorial Day to Labor Day, right? But if you have the proper gear, you can stretch it out to, you know, late March and all the way into November. I pretty much paddle year-round. I can always find open water someplace, but with, you know, the right clothing, you can do that. So it's just important to have something that will protect you should you end up in the water. I find paddling late and early season the best time to go, because there's no people, there's no mosquitoes, there's no bugs. And, you know, like right now, the Wisconsin River, it's spectacular. Perfect fall color everywhere. And, you know, the sandbars are all open and you can get a good camp in. So, yeah, good clothing. We spend a lot of time talking about clothing. That's a really important part of gear as well. You know, you look at clothing as something different. I look at it as part of your gear.
And what about, you know, in terms of falling in and stuff, there's been so many improvements in, you know, your life jacket kind of thing or you know, built right into your clothing. Talk a little about that.
Yeah, safety gear, it's come a long way. I mean, it used to be life preservers. Now they call them personal flotation devices. Were pretty much something you had to tolerate. They weren't very comfortable. Now the designers figured out that basically, number one, people need to wear these things if they're going to work. And number two, half the market is women. And it's actually more than half the market. And it used to be PFDs were made to fit, you know, men, which, mm-hmm. you know, doesn't take a rocket science to figure that out, that it's not going to fit women too. So now we have women-specific clothing, women-specific PFDs. And they even, you know, reinforce areas that usually get cold. Like my wife, her feet are always cold. So you get little thicker booties and things like that. So they're looking at the market in a much more proactive, smart way.
Virginia in Royalton is next. So let's go to Virginia. Hi, thanks for calling. Well, let's see. Hold on. First, okay, now I've got you on, Virginia. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Say, I'm calling because I have a bit of a problem. I have an unusual passenger. I recently adopted a German Shepherd that has just seems to have a little bit of an insecurity problem. Every time we leave home, it knows how to open doors. So,
oh, never buy a dog smarter than you. It's
not. It is. It's smarter than the door anyway, I can tell you that. At any rate, we choose to take it boating with us when we go, and we go rafting or tubing down the river here. And we recently developed a hole in our skiff, and we're looking to get a different boat for and would like to take our dog along with us. He enjoys it tremendously. Anyway, what I'm looking for is something that would be lightweight, preferably, and wondering what you might suggest.
Lots of choices, again. Basically, I'm producing some instructional DVDs right now, and there's one. I just shot the one on tandem kayaking, and one section I did on there was just about how to handle dogs. And there's a lot of little tricks that I've learned over the years with my short hair and my lab. Who is smarter than me? Okay. If she had opposable thumbs, she'd take over the world. But it's all about making the dog comfortable in the boat. And basically, I use bath mats in the bottom, just rubberized bath mats, because they like something to stand on. They don't like the slippery bottom of a boat. But then, you know, it's a matter of stability as well. If the boat's really moving around a lot of dogs aren't comfortable with that.
Sure.
So, you know, shorter and wider is probably what you're looking at, something in the 14 to 15 foot range, maybe a 16 footer that has some stability to it. And is the dog comfortable in the boat once she's
very,
in?
Very.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
We don't go on real wild water by any means, but really enjoys it tremendously with the rest of us. So
perfect.
I get tired of toting that skiff. It's rather heavy, and I don't like carrying it. We have to go uphill when we get to the end of our journey, and like something lightweight so we can take our trips more frequently and together.
Virginia, what do you consider lightweight?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I don't know what the skiff weighs, but it'd be more pleasurable.
So 50, 55 pounds, would that be?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah, no-brainer.
Okay.
Yeah, no-brainer. I'd look at a boat called the Fisherman 14.
Okay.
The Fisherman from Winona. It's made out of Royalex. It's one of those tough boats I just talked about. I think it's 36 or 38 inches wide and 14 feet long. That's a really nice boat for little streams and moving, you know, moving water, not white water.
And sure, and expense-wise, what are we looking at?
I think they're about 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Anything less out there you might recommend?
Oh, well, yeah, but then you're going to go up in weight. I mean, there's a 14-footer we carry called it's a Mad River Explorer 14. That is, I think it's $699, but it's pushing 75 pounds.
Oh,
so it just depends on, you know, and the other thing is, you know, used. Used is always you know, a better deal if you can find the right boat. If you can't find the right boat, it's the worst deal in the world. So,
yeah.
Good
Thank
luck.
You very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Scott in Madison, hi.
Hi, guys. Hello, Darren. I've met both of Darren's dogs over the years, and I would say he's smarter than both of them.
Oh, come on.
He sells himself short. I just had a quick lead for the fellow that called earlier about his sleep apnea mask. My wife's uncle participated in a clinical study of a sort of an unpowered mouthpiece that makes your jaw jut out when you sleep, and it's totally unplugged, and he's had great success with it. So if that guy is still listening, ask your doctor if he or she knows of such a thing. It's very much like what you do when you clear someone's airway for CPR. You pull the chin out so that the throat opens up and allows the air to pass through unobstructed.
Very cool.
Really
Thank
cool.
you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, take care, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Mark in Chicago, I think it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, it's afternoon. But I wanted to know what the 20-foot Grumman canoes, do they make them anymore out of solid aluminum? And if not, what would be a large canoe like that you could carry a little camping equipment in and stuff like that that would be pretty stable and, you know, about the same? The canoe probably weighs 100 pounds, but...
A 20-footer, yeah, at least.
I'll take my answer off the air, but I just wanted to know if there's a big canoe like that, if Grumman makes them anymore, and if there's a replacement type, and approximately how much it would cost.
Okay. What do you think, Darren?
Grumman still does make canoes. Well, Grumman technically is out of business. They sold off their canoe business and started a new company called Marathon Canoe up in upstate New York. The 20-footer, I'm not sure of. They still make the 17s and all that. They are over 100 pounds. They're pretty beefy. There are other boats out there now. A company we work with called Esquif out of Quebec makes one called the Miramichi. I think that's 20-foot square stern, actually. And I think it's right around 100 as well. It's Royalex, not aluminum. Aluminum as a material has some problems with it. It's a good material for UV. You can set it outside forever, which is why outfitters love them. But as far as you know, traveling over rocks and submerged logs, it tends not to flex. It sticks instead. Mm-hmm. Royal X tends to slide over. So, yeah, there's big boats out there. Not very many of them. Most people, an 18-footer is usually enough for them. I mean, I'd recommend an 18-footer with a side mount, for a motor. If you want something that's more versatile, the square sterns tend to get more of a motorized craft all the time.
Mm. Pete in Chippewa Falls, hello to you.
Hi. Shopping for a canoe, and I noticed there's several different bottoms to different canoes. There's some with a keel, some with a smooth flat bottom. Some with an inverted channel. I was just wondering if you could tell me the difference.
Sure. There's varying degrees. You have a perfectly round bottom boat, which no one wants except for Olympic kayak racers, because that minimizes the amount of water rubbing on the boat. That's what makes them fast, that on the hull shape. And then a perfectly flat bottom boat is exactly the opposite. It sort of maximizes the water surface you're rubbing against, but provides a little bit more initial stability. When I talk about stability in canoes, I talk about two things. There's initial stability and there's secondary stability. The initial stability is what it feels like when you first get in. Okay. The secondary stability is what it feels like when you lean it. So a boat with good initial stability, usually a flat bottom boat, it's kind of like, leaning back in a kitchen chair. It's very stable as long as all 4 feet on the ground. As soon as you lean that thing, pretty soon you're over on your back, right? There's no warning. With a shallow arch boat with a curve to it, it's kind of like a rocking chair. It might wiggle around a little bit when you first sit down in it, but the more you lean back and the more you lean forward, the more the boat sort of pushes back. So ultimately, a boat with a little bit of arch to it is more stable. The inverted channel is usually done to basically stiffen the bottom of the boat if it's really flat. Those are usually wider boats. Hydrodynamically, as far as moving through the water, they're not as good, but they do provide a good stiff surface, and that's a good way to maximize the stiffness of the boat, which is not a bad thing.
Okay, Pete, thank you.
More than you wanted to know, probably. Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Mark in Waukesha, hello to you.
Yeah, well, I've got a Discovery 174 that I bought from the old Rutabaga when it was in Milwaukee. But I've got some cracks in it that have developed over the years. I'm wondering if there's anything I could do to repair that. It's down in the bottom of the canoe.
Is it blue?
Yes.
Is it from 1990?
Oh, somewhere about there. Maybe a little bit earlier than that even.
You might be surprised to hear this may be a warranty issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In the early 90s, 90, 91, I think they had a bad batch of blue plastic, and they formed these little hairline fractures. And
yeah.
It's on the outside of the boat, not on the inside, correct?
On the outside, yes.
Yeah. I'll certainly submit it for a warranty claim. I think it'd be fun to see what they do. But it doesn't really damage the boat. You can still paddle it. You can do everything you want with it. It's not going to leak. If it leaks water into the foam core, then you've got an issue you need to deal with. And I don't know that it owes you that much after 17 years. you might consider upgrading.
Yeah, well, we were actually thinking we don't really need the 17-footer anymore because the kids are all grown up and out of the house.
Perfect.
And so we were thinking of moving into something a little newer, but I also would kind of like to maybe limp this by at least for another year or two.
It'll work for another year or two. I mean, unless you have water seeping into the core through the outline, because the outside layer is solid, the inside layer is foam. It's a foam poly.
Yeah, it may be getting to the core. The cracks have gotten longer than just little ones. Yeah,
sure. Well, look at two solo canoes. That's the best way.
Okay. But you could still turn that in if you wanted.
I would, bring it in. I'll send the serial number in. You never know.
You never know. All right, Mark. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Darren, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. The time flew by. And go to rutabaga.com, correct?
Sure.
For some more information on canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring.
People can always email me, too.
At
Darren B.
Darren B.
At Rutabaga.com.
At Rutabaga.com. Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga. Really pleased to have him with us. And, of course, we'll have him back again, and we'll talk with him some more. Just to mention, coming up tomorrow, we'll have Connie LeMay on. She's editor of Lake Superior Magazine, so I'm looking forward to that. And then Madison attorney Ken Doran talks about the issues of real estate foreclosure. And that's a big issue as well. Thanks so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.